Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I was once lost, but now I'm found. Listen to John Schaefer on Soundcheck.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Ever wish you could see what it's really like to be on tour with a successful band? Even better, imagine you are on tour with that band and you have a camera so you can document the whole experience. Wouldn't that be great? Of course, you'd need to ask the right questions.
How famous do you think you are?
How fast can you play?
What kind of drugs and how many drugs have you done?
Do you carry wallets on a stage with you, your ID while you're playing?
Actually, I do, yeah.
That's just weird to me.
First-time filmmaker Tom Berninger followed his brother Matt on tour with his band The National. Tom asked all the wrong questions, made some really wrong decisions, and ended up with the opening film in this year's Tribeca Film Festival. Today we look ahead to a bumper crop of music-related movies in the annual event, plus the Dominican singer, guitarist, and songwriter Juan Soriano. He's known as El Duque de la Bachata, the Duke of Bachata, the catchy Afro-Dominican pop style. He'll play live. And speaking of catchy pop music, remember this? Most listeners know Shuggie Otis because of this song, Strawberry Letter 23. It would go on to be one of the big hits of 1977 in a version by the Brothers Johnson. But musicians always knew there was more to Shuggie Otis than one hit single. Al Kooper and Frank Zappa worked with him. The Rolling Stones even asked him to replace Mick Taylor when he left the band. But Shuggie declined. He had just released his 1974 album, Inspiration Information. But that would be his last album until now. Shuggie Otis's Inspiration Information is being reissued, and with it, an album of previously unheard songs called Wings of Love. Shuggie Otis, welcome to Soundcheck.
Oh, thank you very much, John. Good to be here.
Inspiration Information, that had been released once before in like 2001, right?
2001, The Walkabout.
Right.
Yeah.
This was your first album as an adult. You'd been a teenager when you had done all the previous work. Was it kind of a statement of, like, this is who I am?
I suppose so, because, you know, they gave me free rein to do whatever I wanted to do. And so...
They being Epic Records?
Being Epic Records, yeah. Mm-hmm. And my father said, okay, you know, let him do it. I guess because of Strawberry Letter, because I played all the instruments on that.
Right.
And we just continued on with that formula. And... they let me do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned your dad, the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, R&B pioneer, Johnny Otis.
Yeah.
You are, in fact, Johnny Otis Jr.,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And is Otis, did your father ever legally change his last name from Veliotis?
Yes,
Greek?
He did.
He did. So you are literally, I mean, and legally, Johnny Otis Jr.
Yes.
Okay. But dad cast a big shadow, and for you to have, like, you know, a hit single, mm-hmm. and now, you know, your own recording career... How hard was that for you to kind of, you know, become your own person?
Oh, I don't know how hard it was. Well, you know, the first album, it was the first time I'd ever start singing, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And the second album, I was a little more comfortable with it. And by the time the third album came around, I had already, like, taken some private lessons for writing music and stuff. And so I was getting to a lot of different kind of things. Classical, jazz, and whatnot, you know. So I was really into experimenting, exploring writing, you know, coming up with ideas. So I guess that's when that style came out, you know.
So it really was kind of, you know, a statement of a maturing artist.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. This is the title track from that 1974 album that is now being reissued with bonus tracks and a whole album of previously unheard material. This is Inspiration Information from my guest Shuggy Otis. Just a little bit from Shuggy Otis's 1974 album, Inspiration Information. That's the title track. And this album, Shuggy, it took you a couple of years to make this record, right?
Well, not exactly. We started in 72 at Columbia Studios in Hollywood. And then we had to get ready for a Johnny Otis tour of Europe that started in the summer. Mm-hmm. So there was a break that we had to take. And then when my dad went to the offices, Sony offices in London, he wanted to negotiate the deal for the third album. So instead of a cash deal, he wanted to have a 16-track studio built in the back of our house, and which they went for.
Wow.
So that's how I was able to finish up the album at home.
Wow. Yeah. And doing all of the instruments except for the strings and the horns.
Yes, that's it. You're right. Yeah. I played everything but the strings and the horns and the harp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this was Epic Records, who, it seems, had you sort of pegged as a blues guitarist.
Right.
And now you show up with this thing that has, you know, kind of soul and jazz and all kinds of stuff, R&B. Was that, how did they react?
I don't think they reacted. Yeah, they didn't. Right.
Yeah. So this was something unexpected, but it was the music you were.
It's what I was into. You know. Yeah.
Including several instrumental tracks. Did you see yourself first as a guitarist and a singer, kind of second to that?
A singer, not at first. No. Yeah. A guitarist in a back. Backup guitars. I played with Dad for years before I did my albums, my first album. But the third one, I was coming out, my own style was coming out, so I was really interested in just to keep going on with that, you know.
Right. So there's a lot of, in addition to the actual instrumental tracks, there's a lot of care being taken with the actual sound of the instrumentation in the various songs, including you were a very early adopter of a kind of early form of the drum machine.
Yeah, I was one of the first to use the drum machine on the record.
What did you like about that sound as opposed to having, like, you know, a drummer or doing the drumming yourself?
Well, you know, at first it wasn't so much the sound. I picked one up and it helped me lay tracks.
Right.
But at first, you know, when I got it, I'd go home and I could play with it like any time I wanted to, and have my own little private drummer there who wouldn't talk back to me and he'd keep perfect time, you know. So that's how I wrote a lot of those songs, just messing around, you know, just jamming with that little rhythm game. Yeah.
Is that how Out of My Head sort of developed?
Yes, it did. Yeah, I was playing a little Vox organ one night, late at night, and I just came up with it, the chords, and I wrote the words later.
And you wrote them all wrong. Out of My Head, A-H-T-U-H, M-I-H-E-D.
Yeah.
So,
well, I don't know how to spell too.
Well, you were an early adopter of hip-hop spelling, too, you know, okay. Where everyone spells everything phonetically.
Oh, yeah, right.
This is from the 1974 album by my guest, Shuggy Otis, Inspiration Information, now being reissued along with all of this previously unheard material. The album, dual album set, out on April 16th. This is the track, Out of My Head. From my guest, Shuggy Otis, his 1974 album, now reissued, called Inspiration Information. That's Out of My Head. Shuggy, are you aware of how many emerging indie rock bands are going for just this sound now?
Not really.
It's really come around full circle.
Wow. Yeah.
And you have come full circle with this record because it's being reissued on Epic.
Right.
The label that kind of dropped you like a hot potato when you delivered it. Any mixed feelings about that?
Well, I could say this much. You know, I had a conversation with a friend who had kind of the inside scoop of why I was dropped. It wasn't just me. They dropped my dad first. He was signed as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 weeks after they dropped him, they dropped me.
It strikes me that, you know, if a record label is going to, like, drop a future Hall of Famer from their roster, anybody could get dropped. It's just part of the business, and you know.
Well, what my friend told me was, at one point, when I was dropped, not only was I dropped, but all the R&B and jazz artists were dropped.
Right, and that happened again in the around 1980 or so, where all the R&B and jazz major labels would just start sloughing them off. Whenever there was a dip in sales, that's what would happen.
I see, yeah.
Now, also around this time, and I want to get to the unreleased stuff, but let's just finish up this part of the conversation. This is around the time the album comes out, and then the Rolling Stones come calling, and you know, Mick Taylor is leaving the band, and they want you to take his place.
Well, not just me. They called quite a few guitarists, but they called me. You know, Billy Preston called me, and he was
the keyboardist.
He was with the Stones at the time. I think they were in the room with him, and he said, "I'm sitting here with the Stones, and they want to know, you know, if you want to join." Now, I was having a gig that night with my own group, and I was just starting to get into my own groove, you know, and so it was nothing against any of these groups, but I didn't want to be a sideman anymore, you know. I wanted to do my own thing, you know, and finally now I'm able to do it on the level that I always wanted to do it on. You know, I had a lot of bad luck because after Epic, I just went to every label you can imagine for years, all on up to the 90s, you know. I would take time off here and there just because nothing, you know, everybody would say no. There was maybe one or two that would say, you know, I'd like to do something, but we got to get you a producer. And I said, no way. You know, I don't want a producer. I just produced my last album. You know, that's over with. That's the past, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I knew where I wanted to go, you know. I knew that I wanted to control the show anyway. I knew that much.
We're speaking with Shuggy Otis, the singer and songwriter. His 1974 album, Inspiration Information, is being reissued on Sony's Epic Legacy label. And it's being reissued with a second CD called Wings of Love. Now, is this CD the answer to the question that people always ask, well, what were you doing all that time?
Well, partly, you know, some of the songs on this album were done while I was still signed with Epic. And you can hear, like, the difference. They're dated on the album. And so the ones that are from 74, you know, those were the ones that sound a little bit more like this album, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets into the 80s, it has more of a kind of a 80s pop sound to it, maybe, you might say.
Well, there's a track called Don't You Run Away, which begins with a riff that's kind of similar to the famous guitar solo from Strawberry Letter 23, except it's kind of slowed
right.
down or something. But the rest of the song has a much, mm-hmm. it doesn't sound like a 70s tune. When is that one from?
That was probably, that was the 80s, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the sound changed.
It certainly did. This is from this collection of previously unheard songs by Shuggie Otis called Wings of Love. The song's called Don't You Run Away. Don't You Run Away, a song from Shuggie Otis, which, if not new to him, is certainly new to the rest of us. It's on the companion CD, Wings of Love, that's coming out with the reissue of his 1974 album, Inspiration Information. Still playing all the instruments?
Yeah, but I'm starting to feature, on the next album, I'm going to feature some new people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a band, not a great band now, so I'm going to use them on some of the tracks.
Right.
Well. Yeah.
So now you have the opportunity to sort of present a lot of the other work that you'd been doing over the course of those years. This last song that you said was from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Title track, Wings of Love, this is like an epic. It's like 11 minutes long. Was this a kind of a tale that grew in the telling, or did you set out to make a really big piece of music?
Not really. You know, I did the original version in 1980, and it has a different kind of groove. It's more of a kind of like a country and western groove. It still has the long guitar solo in it, but it's a little more laid back. I took this arrangement here, was kind of like taken from, okay, I wrote the song all but the second verse. I had my friend, Lawrence Dickens, a bass player, a friend of mine. He was played with me and also my father as well. But I asked him, I said, look, I'm stumped for lyrics on the second verse. Can you come help me out? So he came over and I played it for him, what I had. And within 5 minutes, he had the verse, the second verse. And it was so great, you know, and we recorded it, the first version. And I took that around, you know, to a lot of places and, you know, always got turned down. And then I decided to re-record it. He had done a version of it somewhere else with some other guys, and he played it for me. And it had a different arrangement. The beat was more like the one that I'm using here. So I kind of took his arrangement.
Of your song.
Right, my song.
Well, that's interesting. Well, yeah. I mean, of course, you had that with Strawberry Letter 23, where you heard another group playing your, you know, you had that experience of hearing your music refracted through someone else's lens, so to speak. Let's hear a little bit of this song. It's Wings of Love. It's the title track from the album of previously unreleased material by my guest, Shuggie Otis.
Love has sent you, but within you.
That is just a little bit of a song called Wings of Love by my guest Shuggy Otis. It is a big piece of work, and the title track from the album Wings of Love, which is the companion CD that comes out with Inspiration Information, the reissue of Shuggy's 1974 classic. He's with me on Soundcheck here today. We were just talking, Shuggy, about how, you know, you had the opportunity with this song, with Strawberry Letter 23, a couple of other times, to hear your music sort of coming back to you through someone else's, you know, experience of it. What do you feel about when you've heard your music sampled?
Oh, at first I didn't like it, but when times got rough, I started to like it, you know, because people would sample, and that was living money, you know.
Right.
So deep down inside, I don't care so much anymore, really, but I guess I'd rather not have it sampled, you know, or at the time anyway. But, you know, as far as movies are concerned, I welcome movies mm-hmm. to sample it. You know, that's interesting. I think new movie is out that has one of my songs, and I can't remember the name of it. So other people have done it, have sampled my stuff, and I've heard my ideas come back to me, you know, and people always like to say, well, so-and-so, you know, got this from you and blah, 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 and this person yeah, took this idea. But, you know, everybody takes ideas from people, you know? I mean, that's... Who doesn't?
Right.
You know, everybody is influenced by somebody, you know.
Who were you influenced by? Your dad, Johnny Otis?
He was my first influence, you know. I guess I kind of idolized him. You know, I used to look at his old pictures in his big scrapbook, and I could see his whole career from the 30s on up to the 50s, you know, all these pictures. And I suppose show business attracted me subconsciously.
Let me just, before I let you go, I have to ask this question. I'm sure it's been asked of you many times. The big hit song is called Strawberry Letter 23. In the song itself, it's Strawberry Letter 22.
Right.
Because it rhymes with you, with the end of the preceding line. Why the number?
Why the number 23? Because the song is really about a boy and a girl who write letters to each other. So the 22nd letter is delivered by the girl to the boy, and so he writes a song called Strawberry Letter 23.
Got it.
You know, basically. People used to ask me, what does that song mean? And it used to make me laugh because I said, it doesn't really mean anything, you know. But if you listen to it, it means something to me now because so many years have gone by and, you know, there are things that have some kind of meaning, but they're more or less private, mm-hmm. private things, you know.
But that's also one of the great things about art. You were talking about how everyone's influenced by everyone else, and you can take a song and you can put your own meaning to it, and it means it's just as valid as what the composer meant.
Right.
Well, Shuggy Otis, it has been a real pleasure having you with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. That reissue of Inspiration Information, along with the collection of unreleased material called Wings of Love, is out today. And you can catch Shuggy Otis this Thursday at B.B. King's Blues Club and Friday at the Music Hall of Williamsburg. Yesterday on the show, we talked about music that our parents chose for us when we were kids. Here's a message left on the Soundcheck voicemail box.
Hi, it's Dave. And my parents were kind enough to expose me to the catalog of the Beatles from 1969 when I was born. Well, and I still listen to them almost daily now. So I was thrilled to always be shown that by my parents. So yeah, they exposed me to good things, thankfully. I live up in Maine. Love hearing you on the radio.
Thanks for the message, Dave. If you want to call us and tell us about the music your parents chose for you, good or bad, you can leave us a message at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612.
Up next, Joan Soriano is known as the Duke of Bachata, the guitar-driven musical form born in the Dominican Republic. Soriano and members of his family band join us to play live. Plus, the music movies on tap at this year's Tribeca Film Festival. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's not every day that we have royalty here in the studio, but today you'll meet the Duke of Bachata. That's the name given to the singer and guitarist Joan Soriano. Born in rural Dominican Republic, Joan was one of 15 kids and left school at an early age to work on the family farm. But at 13, music led him to the capital of Santo Domingo and eventually onto the international scene with two well-received records. He's here today with members of the Soriano Family Band, and they're going to start us off by playing a song called Vocales de Amor.
Desde que ya se me fue, ay, M.
That is Joan Soriano singing and playing guitar. His song is called Vocales de Amor. And Jose Luis playing guitar, adding some backing vocals. Griselda Soriano also doing some backing vocals. They are all members of the Soriano family band. Joan Soriano's most recent album is, in fact, called La Familia Soriano. That album produced by Benjamin DeMenel, who joins us in the studio to handle the talking duties while the rest of the band is playing. Ben, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, John.
Last time you were on the show 5 years ago was with another great Dominican act, the
Puerto Plata.
Puerto Plata, the octogenarian singer and guitarist. Much younger crew this time around. Joan, we've been calling him Joan in the days leading up to this. I guess both are right. Is that right?
In the way the Dominicans speak Spanish, they interchange the J and the Y sound. So
okay.
Either way is fine.
But I'm going to say Joan since that's what you guys are saying.
Sure.
They call him El Duque de la Bachata, the Duke of Bachata. What is bachata?
Bachata is it's actually one of the newest styles of music to have evolved around the world, and it originates in the Dominican Republic. And it started to sprout up after the Dominican dictator Trujillo was assassinated in 1960 or 61. And then sort of within a couple months of his assassination, suddenly these bachata records started being recorded.
So it must have been sort of breeding there in the countryside.
Something was going on, but there's no record of it.
Wow. Yeah. So it would have started probably along the lines of what we're hearing today, a couple of people with guitars just sitting around singing. But it's, I mean, here in New York, we think of bachata because there were bands like Aventura, who are now broken up, who had a very electric sound. So that's a part of bachata too, right?
So the first transition, I mean, there have been several transitions in bachata. That first transition from basically a sound that was very acoustic, Spanish sounding with the traditional guitars, to electric guitar happened in the late 80s, early 90s. That was the first transition. And actually, Joan grew up, he started off playing with bands with the old tradition, and he was sort of part of that generation that first went electric. Then bachata started to become international with that format. There was a big migration of Dominicans to New York City, and so then this homegrown New York City sound came around that mixed bachata with R&B.
Hip-hop.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bachata is a dance as well as music?
It is a dance. And in fact, one of the ways that it's been sort of exploding in popularity internationally is through this dance community, which exists all over the world. There's somewhere where they're teaching Latin dance and where they're dancing it in clubs. And that community is kind of connected on Facebook, and so somehow that's how the music's been spread.
We're talking about Joan Soriano's music with his manager and producer, Ben DeMenel. And how did he get the name El Duque, the Duke?
Well, the way that he says it, there were a lot of people calling themselves the King of Bachata. And so he wanted to be the Duke.
Wasn't so much competition for that title. how well known is Joan in the diaspora, the Dominican diaspora?
He's starting to become more well known. He actually he was very well known as a musician that was backing other big name Dominican acts, and that's when I met him, and I thought that he really had a potential to be his own artist. And I started introducing him to the more international audience. And so he actually gained more fame in the international audience before it coming back to the Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh. Let's hear another song. Tu te fuiste y me dejaste? Did I say that right?
That's right.
Okay. Once again, it's Joan Soriano and members of the Soriano Family Band playing live on Soundcheck.
no te voy a reír. Como ayer te reía, ya no te voy a tener. Como ayer te tenía, ya no te voy a decir. Ay, cosita bonita, tú te fuiste y me dejaste sin yo hacerte un porqué. Eso a ti no te dio pena. Sí, un viejo refrán que dice que el último que se ríe siempre se ríe mejor.
Once again, music from Juan Soriano, the guitarist and singer-songwriter from the Dominican Republic and members of the Soriano family band, Griselda Soriano on backing vocals, Jose Luis on vocals and guitar as well. Juan has two international releases, La Familia Soriano and El Duque de la Bachata, The Duke of Bachata, both produced by Benjamin DeMenel, who's also here with us. And Ben, the story goes that Juan made his first guitar out of a tin can and fishing line.
That's right, an oil can, a can of sort of cooking oil and fishing line, yeah.
Well, now that he's playing a proper guitar, he still kind of has that sound. How's he doing that?
Well, that's sort of part of the sound of bachata, and maybe it's the strings are arranged so they're very close to the frets, so they kind of buzz a little bit as they're played, and it's played with a thumb pick, so that kind
of... Oh, it's like a... Yeah. Okay, so he's got the thing on attached to his thumb that he's striking the strings
with. That's right. And, you know, some of the origins of this music are also banjo, So maybe it carried with it a little bit of that aesthetic.
So this is coming out of Afro-Dominican roots, this style.
That's right.
Okay. The last time you were with us with the artist Puerto Plata, you mentioned how he had started his musical career 50, 60 years ago singing in brothels. Bachata had that kind of image of being associated with underclass, with illiterate peasants and brothels and criminals and stuff. Has that changed?
It's changed slowly. And I'll say that, you know, Johannes told me that he not only played in brothels, he lived in brothels when he was sort of a young teenager trying to make his way as a musician.
I'm sure there are stories there.
If there are, he doesn't tell too much of them.
Okay. Well, Ben, thank you very much. And Johan and Griselda, Jose Luis, gracias. Thank you so much for
playing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Johan Soriano. If you liked our session with Johan Soriano, there's more on soundcheck.org, including an extra song and a video that we shot during his performance. By the way, we record a different artist in the Soundcheck studio practically every day. You can listen in to our recording sessions at 2 p.m. Eastern. Tomorrow, join us on soundcheck.org. We'll have a visit from the English soul and R&B singer Jamie Liddell. He'll perform songs from his new self-titled album.
Maybe you're a sinner, maybe you're all right. To me, it just don't mean anything. Not gonna let you be the winner, not without a fight to think about now. Well, well, well. Every little thing that you do, trying to play with me, don't you know you better do yourself a favor.
That's Do Yourself a Favor by Jamie Liddell, our guest in the Soundcheck studio tomorrow at 2 p.m. You can tune in live at soundcheck.org to hear his performance. Up next, a look at the music-heavy offerings at this year's Tribeca Film Festival, including movies about the late singer-songwriter Jeff Buckley and the Brooklyn band The National. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and the Tribeca Film Festival is back now in its 12th year and kicking off tomorrow with hundreds of hours of brand new features, shorts, and documentaries, including one about the Brooklyn band The National. It's a documentary that takes its title from this song, Mistaken for Strangers, and it opens the festival tomorrow night. Joining us to highlight some of this year's more musical selections is the festival's director of programming, Jenna Terranova. Jenna, welcome back.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Is this kind of a surprise choice, Mistaken for Strangers, to open the festival?
We've opened with a musical doc before, so it's not new for us. But usually, yeah, we have a big Hollywood opening. So we were excited when we saw this movie because it has such a great spirit, and we felt it really embodies the spirit of all the films that are in the festival. It's funny. It's about a filmmaker making a movie for the first time. So we really felt this is a great way to kick off the festival this year.
And that filmmaker is?
Oh, Tom Berninger.
Who is the brother of Matt Berninger, the lead singer of The National.
He is. He's the younger brother, you know, the younger sort of slacker brother of let's say. You know, and you know, Matt is the perfect brother who over the years was always good at everything. And Tom has been struggling to find his voice and what he does. And he's an aspiring filmmaker as well. So this is a great match and an exploration of a relationship between two brothers, and really funny and heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. And The National have a new record coming out in May. And this song called Demons is a new track from it. You can also visit soundcheck.org to see a trailer for the new film, Mistaken for Strangers.
Do my crying underwater. Can't get down any farther. All my drowning friends can see. Now there is no running from it. It's become the crux of me. I wish that I could rise above it. But I stay down. love and wish that I could rise above it.
That's a little bit from the forthcoming album by the band The National. The record comes out in May, and that song is called Demons. The documentary about the band The National opens the Tribeca Film Festival tomorrow, and the film festival runs through the 28th. We're speaking with their director of programming, Jenna Terranova. Mistaken for Strangers, the name of Tom Berninger's documentary about his brother Matt's band. And it is certainly not the only musical offering in the festival this year.
No, we always have music in films every year. Sometimes they are more a fabric of the film. This happens to be what we're talking about, a documentary. But there are other films that feature music, not only in the soundtrack side of it, but we have a film called Greetings from Tim Buckley, that where it's about the son of Tim Buckley and how he is revisiting his father's work because they're doing a concert in New York City.
So the story is that Jeff Buckley, this is like at a time where his career is just beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the shadow of his late dad, who really he didn't know at all, has always been there in the background and is suddenly looming large because of this concert that the people are doing.
Exactly. So it's him trying to reconnect with his father's work. It's exactly, get over that hump of that he's standing in his own way, in a way. Jeff's standing in his own way because of his father. So it affronts those issues. And the main character is Penn Badgley from Gossip Girl. Mm-hmm. And he actually performs in the movie.
As Jeff Buckley.
As
the late Jeff Buckley.
Yes. Penn actually, he has a pretty good voice. I mean, he really carries the role really well beyond just the acting part of it. So. Mm. And it takes place here in New York City.
And seems to be inspired by a true story, because in 1991 there was, in fact, a concert as a tribute to Tim Buckley, and it featured Jeff Buckley playing this song called Once I Was.
Once I was a soldier, and I fought on foreign sands for you. Once I was a hunter, and I brought home fresh meat for you. Once I was a lover.
That's a little bit of the actual historical event, a recording from 1991 of Jeff Buckley singing the song Once I Was at a concert that was a tribute to his father, Tim Buckley. And that is the subject of this film called Greetings from Tim Buckley. And in the film, as Jenna was telling us, Penn Badgley plays Jeff Buckley and sings that same song.
Once I was. Once I was a lover, and I searched behind your eyes for you. So now come another to tell you I was just a lie.
Just a little bit from the film Greetings from Tim Buckley, starring Penn Badgley as the late singer Jeff Buckley. They are singing his father's song, Once I Was. We're talking about some of the musical offerings at the Tribeca Film Festival this year, which opens tomorrow and runs through the 28th. In addition to some of these longer form things, Jenna, there's also a bunch of shorts, mm-hmm. including one set in Scotland.
Yes, there's a short set in Scotland, and it's about the disappearance of folk music, but it's also infused with these witness accounts of people who live in Scotland who have had experience with supernatural beings, essentially. So it's very haunting, because you have the Scottish folk music, which is beautiful, and a cappella, and then you have these interwoven sort of ghost stories where people are talking about these interesting encounters that they've had. And the idea is that, you know, the music is passing away, and so are we, but there's always still this resonance, you know, whether it's musically or, you know, supernaturally in some ways.
Hmm. Well, that's a lot to pack into a short film. When the song dies, features, among others, the traditional singer and storyteller Sheila Stewart. Try saying that three times fast. Here she is introducing a song that has special meaning to her.
There's a special song within my family that we kept the song sacred. So we worship this song, my family did, and it's the main song within my family's culture. Now as I rove out one summer's morn, among lofty hills, moorland and mountain, it was there I spied a lovely maid, whilst I with others was out a hunting. No shoes nor stockings did she wear, neither had she hat, nor had she feathers, but her golden locks I in a ring was fair.
That's like some striking singing there, almost keening sound from Sheila Stewart, this traditional singer and storyteller from Scotland, from the short film called When the Song Dies. The Tribeca Film Festival's director of programming is Jenna Terranova, sharing some of the music-themed films and shorts with us on Soundcheck today. And we'll wrap up with a film called Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me. There's a provocative title. What does that refer to?
She's a provocative lady. I mean, I think it refers to her. This is a great portrait of Elaine Stritch. It shows her...
The great Broadway and cabaret singer.
Absolutely, who's extremely well-known for all of her Broadway work. She's a character, you might remember, with the big black rim glasses, kind of a suit with a big white-collared shirt. You know, very... speaks her mind and does her own thing for many, many years. And so this is a documentary about sort of her career, essentially, and what's happening now in her life.
And I never liked the word old. I like older. I'm getting older every single day, and so is everybody else. So we're all going together. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And why not enjoy it? Because not a goddamn thing you can do about it.
Well, she's 87 years old.
She's 87 years old, exactly. And actually, she just announced that she's leaving New York and going to spend time with her family out in the Midwest. So this is wonderful for us to be able to celebrate Elaine and her last hurrah in New York. And she'll be there for most all of the screenings, but one especially for a talk back after, so we can learn more about her career and all of the wonderful things she did. But it's a very compelling documentary. She's funny. She's fiery. She's feisty.
Mm-hmm. And she is the subject of Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me, and is now, as you say, retiring, moving to Michigan so she can spend time. Her family takes care of her, et cetera. But from her album, Elaine Stritch at Liberty, we will hear her doing the song appropriately called I'm Still Here. Jenna Terranova, thanks so much for stopping by and sharing some of this with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Good times and bum times, I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here. Plush velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer. I'm here.
A little bit there from Elaine Stritch. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, the musical adaptation of Roald Dahl's 1988 book Matilda has opened on Broadway, and we'll get a review from the New York Times chief theater critic Ben Brantley. And speaking of Broadway, we'll talk with the animal trainer Bill Berlone about prepping dogs for productions of Annie and the upcoming Because of Winn-Dixie. And Iranian singer Bahar Movahed performs live in the studio. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC and New York Public Radio. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our engineering team includes Paul Schneider, George Wellington, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Greta Cohn and Katie Bishop with Alex Kappelman. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. See you back here tomorrow night at 9. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.